award-winning, Peabody award-winning, by the way, for Best International Podcast. We have fans in Wales and Germany, Barry. So, you know, it's Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry with me, my co-host, who I thought I would be seeing next week. But Barry, the Philadelphia trip, it's off, my man.
Yeah. So, Jeff, what was it? Was it the surging, rising numbers of COVID, or was it the violent riots that are taking place in the city currently?
I think it had more to do with the fact that you told us the riots were about a half mile away from where we'd be staying. You know, that's the kind of thing that gives my wife a dim view of Philadelphia. So the trip is not, in fact, off. It is postponed. We are looking perhaps perhaps springtime, March, maybe April, to visit and see all this. Hopefully by then the COVID thing will be a little more under control. Some of the national monuments and things like that, the museums and stuff like that. Because, of course, you know, the Bowdrin's period, as I'm sure everyone knows, big museum people. And we'll be checking that stuff out. But we want to welcome all you to episode 161 of Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. Again, another exciting episode. Barry, so much to talk about. Oh, we've got our match of the week. And, you know, like the great John Lennon once said, life is what happens while you're busy making other plans. We had planned to do one particular match, but then an unfortunate death happened in the wrestling world, the death of Tracy Smothers, the wild-eyed Southern boy. And so we decided this week that we're going to do a match involving Tracy Smothers for our match of the week. So we are going to go to July 7th, 1990 in Baltimore at the Great American Bash. Yes, it is Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express taking on the wild-eyed Southern boys. We're going to be talking about that in a little bit. We are also going to be looking at, oh, another episode of F, Marry, or Kill, Barry. I know you're ready for that. We have another episode. Yeah, two episodes in a row. Florida Man or Not. Barry will be quizzing me.
Jeff, you were 100% last week. You were, well, Jeff, you are 100% correct.
Check. So besides that, we are going to be, we'll be doing a little food talk. We'll be doing a little dog talk here in a second. And then we're going to be discussing another loss that really, you know, really hit us. And that is the death of the great. And I do mean the great Sean Connery. And we're going to be discussing his legacy and his work. Before we get fully invested in the old podcast this week, Barry, I understand from a reliable source that you have a story involving a killer in the Rose household. Yes, a killer lurking. His name is Mr. Noodles. Barry, the floor is yours.
The lovely Mr. Noodles. So I posted a video this week, and it was Mr. Noodles saying, I love you, which if you see it, even I was kind of like, you know, because everybody thinks their dog is special. Everybody thinks their dog is the cutest, is the smartest, and, you know, but he really is saying, I love you. And Mr. Noodles is an interesting, he is the second foster dog. We've actually adopted Mr. Noodles. The first one was a foster dog, and we actually, he got adopted by somebody local in our neighborhood, but we fell in love with Mr. Noodles. And when we got him, we were told he was somewhere between 3 and 4 years old, but he was also really sick. And he was vomiting, diarrhea, and this was on a daily basis. And he still has an issue with food, but we have really spent the last three months.
So far, Barry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but so far, he sounds like me early in my cancer diagnosis. Vomiting, yes. Diarrhea, you couldn't eat anything. Okay, go ahead.
And we took him to two different vets. They could find nothing wrong. They did all the analysis of the stool samples, and they did x-rays, and they couldn't find anything. So we got him on a certain diet of a special kind of food. We don't vary, and he's really healthy. Turns out also that Mr. Noodles is roughly about a year old. Mm-hmm. He's not between 3 and 4. So, and we found out, they said he was somewhere about between a 10 and 11 months old. He'd be about a year now. So we've really taken to this dog, and he's a little white dog, which is the complete opposite of Ozzy. So this past Friday, I should say it wasn't this past Friday, the Friday before, I did my civic duty, Jeff, and I went and I was dropping off my vote. It was something that I felt I was, you know, that I wanted to get done early. I didn't want to do in person. And I went to drop it off, and I put Ozzy in the car with me, and I left Mr. Noodles at home with my wife. And I guess I was gone somewhere around 11 or 12 minutes, and I get a phone call, and it's my wife, and she's hysterical, and she's crying. And so, you know, your wife calls you, she's crying, she's hysterical, you get scared, and, you know, immediately, oh my God, what happened? And Jeff, I've only been gone for really, at a max, 12 minutes, and she said, Noodles just killed a giant rat in the basement. So let me preface this as well, that Noodles is a 15-pound little white dog. I, for the most part, live in the basement. I'm here from sunup to sundown, and then a lot of times even overnight, depending on how deep in the doghouse I am. So I had been in the basement all day. There was no giant rat. I'm gone for 11 minutes, and all of a sudden, there's a giant rat in the basement.
And let's talk more importantly, that's where all your wrestling memorabilia is kept. So if there's a giant rat down there.
Absolutely, Jeff. And I've got everything in boxes, but hey, I'm still freaked out. So I race home, and thank God Ozzy wasn't at home, because that would have been a mess. And I walk through the door, and again, my wife's hysterical. And I should also preface it with that if there's a fly in the house, my wife loses it. Not a bug person, not a rodent person, none of that. So she said, it's in the basement. I think it's a giant rat. It's dead. So, you know, I'm scratching my head. I'm like, what? So she goes, yeah, all of a sudden I'm on the floor playing with Noodles. He freaks out and there's this giant rat climbing up the wall of the basement. And Jeff, you slept in the basement. God knows I've slept in the basement many nights. It's a furnished base. It's a nice furnished basement. So the thought of a giant rat is foreign to me. So I get home. She's hysterical. Noodles is freaked out. Noodles has got, he's like salivating. He's tasted blood. So she goes,
does he have blood around the face area? Anything like that?
So he didn't. He had no blood, but I decided I had to see the dead giant rat for myself. So my wife had taken one of the big cushions from the couch and smashed the giant rat. And that's where it was. Hopefully that's where it was. So I said, okay, so I start to move the pillow, and underneath the pillow was not a giant rat, nor was it a squirrel. It was a chipmunk. And somehow a chipmunk got into our house. It's, as far as I know, it's the first time we've ever had any sort of rodent in the house. And
other than yourself, but you know,
well, exactly. And he basically got a hold of it and he killed it. So I looked at the thing. The thing had blood in its mouth, the chipmunk, and blood appearing to be around the midsection to groin area, and it was as dead as could be. And I lifted it up.
So was it killed by Mr. Noodles or your wife squashing it with the pillow?
I think it was a combination of both.
Okay.
I think Noodles did the initial damage, and then I think she must have fucking laid into it with the pillow. So I clean up the area, the little blood, clean it up, spray it down with some stuff, deposit the dead chipmunk outside, and my wife immediately is on the phone to the vet. Do I need to bring him in? Will there be some sort of testing? And the lady who answers the phone goes, we get this call each and every day. There is no danger. And she said, think of all the dogs that are outside that bring rabbits, squirrels, chipmunks, anything else into the house as a gift for their owner. So we didn't have him tested, but it's just interesting because he is this little white dog that immediately when there was this chipmunk in the house, this dog just fucking lost it. And my wife lost it. Sadly, there is no videotape of my wife freaking out because that would have been a show.
Well, not this time, at least. Right. You know, the whole chipmunk thing, when we moved up to Georgia, we have a back deck off our living room and, you know, which has a stairwell that leads down into our backyard. And when my dogs go down, they in the wood, the chipmunks have burrowed into these little wooden sections. You know, you can see the little holes. And we've seen them, like, you know, where my dogs will be sniffing and they'll come up one hole and they'll go skittering across the back porch area on the ground level. So, you know, we've seen them before and we did not have or never saw chipmunks in Florida. So it's a new, interesting experience in our dogs. Man, once they see one, they don't want to come in. They want to sit out there until they, by God, find those things. So it's not just squirrel hunting now. It's chipmunk hunting, too. So I certainly can see what Mr. Noodles was interested in there. So, but, you know, nice to know because we haven't established if Ozzy's a killer yet, but we definitely have established that Mr. Noodles is a killer.
Yeah, I've always, my impression with Ozzy, and Ozzy freaks out every time he sees a squirrel or anything moving outside. And I don't think Ozzy would go, and I could be way off. I don't think he would go for the juggler. I don't think he would go to kill. I think Ozzy would be fascinated and want to play with the thing and probably kill it just by actually playing with it.
Sure. So now, just to establish, Ozzy in the Rose household, your dog. Now, Mr. Noodles, is that Mrs. Rose's dog Or is it that, is. Okay. Yes. I was going to say.
So as you know, Jeff, and anybody who's a dog person knows, most dogs will attach themselves to one person. They can love multiple people, but there is one person who is their human. And a lot of that is the person that feeds them, the person that walks them, and the person that gives them the majority of the attention. So for me, I've always been the person to feed and walk Ozzy, obviously give him a lot of attention. So he is mine by default. My wife, because she can walk Mr. Noodles, where with Ozzy, he's a 100-pound dog. You know, my wife's 100 pounds. That wouldn't work out. So Mr. Noodles has attached himself to her.
So, okay. All right. Good intel there on Mr. Noodles, as you call him. So, Barry, why don't we now go to the Florida Man or Not portion of our podcast. Why don't you lay it on? And while you're doing that, I am going to send you the three candidates for this week's F, Marry, or Kill. So please,
I love it.
Read, and you'll be getting a text from me, sir.
Okay, I look forward to that. So, Jeff, we have three stories here, and you've got to tell me. We've played this game before, and all of our listeners know this game. First text just came through, Jeff. Is this Florida man, or is this not? So, three stories. We will start off. First story, a human head was found Tuesday morning on the side of a road, police said. A jogger found the head underneath an overpass while running through a residential neighborhood, according to police. The woman reported the human remains to the cops around 7 a.m., and homicide detectives were sent to search the overpass and the nearby wooded area for clues. The woman told police she jogs through the area daily, but had not done so in the last 2 days. It is still unclear when or how the head ended up under the overpass. See what they did there? Ended up under the overpass. Yeah, the identity of the person is also still unknown. Detectives have sent the head to the medical examiner's office for a forensic examination. Jeff, did this occur in the beautiful Sunshine State of Florida, or was this somewhere else?
Let me just say, how many of these discoveries have happened because someone's been out jogging?
Yes.
Or hiking? Yeah, we need to stop doing this because all these, you know, headless corpses or corpses, you know, where you just have the head. It's getting to be a little annoying. So I'm going to just randomly, having been able to garner no clues from the information provided to me, I'm going to guess that the bizarreness of this story, the overpass aspect of the story, I'm going to say Florida.
Jeff, you continue to lay the broom down and do the sweeping. Yes, sir. St. Petersburg, Florida.
What?
Oh, yeah.
Home of the most famous arena in Florida, the St. Petersburg Convention Center?
You mean the Bayfront?
That's what I meant. What the fuck do I know?
I don't know, which is now
the South. I was confusing you with the Miami Beach Convention Center.
Yeah. Now the Salvador Dali Museum, but St. Petersburg. And St. Petersburg, what, about 25, 30 minutes from Lutz? So yes. All right. Second.
Now, well, let me just real quick. Is this a recent story or a story from a couple years ago or what?
This is recent as of, I think, the last week and a half or so. Yes.
Really? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Gotcha. All right. Second story. Julie Boyd, 26, discovered the problem when she and her husband, Mike, 27, had unprotected sexual intercourse for the first time on their wedding night. The couple had been dating for 2 years when they got married.
Wait. They were dating for 2 years, and this is the first time they were having unprotected sex?
And so, you know, so think about that exactly.
Poor Mike, but, man. She made him wait.
He did. And they had always used protection. As soon as they had unprotected intercourse for the first time.
You like saying that, don't you?
Unprotected. I really do. It makes me feel a little dirty, and I'm really enjoying that. So, yes. As soon as they had unprotected intercourse for the first time, she knew something was wrong. And Julie now speaking, before we were always very careful and, you know, used protection. And that time we didn't, Mrs. Boyd told ABC News. So we figured we were married now. So if we got pregnant, we got pregnant. Mrs. Boyle added, the pain that I was feeling was inside, kind of like somebody was sticking needles up inside of me, like a burning, like really painful burning. Doctors were unable to explain why she experienced pain after intercourse, unprotected intercourse, Jeff, until a friend of hers suggested she might be allergic to her husband's semen.
Oh, that's a tough gig.
She was for him, absolutely. She was eventually diagnosed with seminal plasma hypersensitivity, which can cause itching and burning. That's that painful itching and burning you yes. always hear about. Yes. Dr. Andrew
Have
Goldstein.
Have you ever suffered from the painful itching and burning, Barry?
Never from semen. No, well, never.
I thought maybe you'd gone to Vietnam or something and came back with the painful itching.
It's on my list. It's on my bucket list.
I'm sure you just want to buy a suit. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. Dr. Andrew Goldstein from a local university medical center said, the body recognizes semen as a foreign protein, just as it would recognize a peanut allergen or pollen. So you have swelling, you have itching, you have inflammation of the nerve endings. His colleague, Jonathan Bernstein, developed a developed some sort of fucking treatment similar to receiving an allergy.
Thank you, Harry Reasoner.
Exactly. After determining the proteins in Mr. Boyd's semen that triggered his wife's reaction, he created a serum to counteract the problem. Although the treatment works for some couples, it did not for the Boyds. They have now started adoption proceedings.
Wow. Boy,
exactly. So imagine this poor guy.
So
this poor guy is getting
he's
going, okay, I don't have to wear condoms now. I can come wherever I want.
Yes.
We're going to have a child. Life's going to be great. Yeah. What's the over under on this one?
Marriage is going to be ending quickly. Yes. So, wow, there is so much to unravel here besides all the obvious jokes that a less professional broadcast might. You know, because we don't want to make light of the situation. Certainly not.
Sure.
First of all, let me just say that the whole problem with the if there's a problem with the protein in the seminal fluid, you know what it's probably from, Barry? I'm going to guess it's probably fucking salad. That's what it is. You people, you make fun of me. You ridicule me. And this poor schlum now, his wife's getting some sort of bacterial infection because of his semen. It's because he eats fucking salad. I am going to guess, and I'm going to go completely out on a limb here, Barry. And if I'm correct in my assumption, I want you to give me a round of applause. I'm going to say, not only is this not Florida, I'm going to guess that this couple from a different country.
So you're half right, which I'll give you.
Thank you.
Minor.
So the proverbial smattering of applause.
It is. You get a little smattering right there. I can see Sweet Lou is doing he's doing a golf clap. I could see Sweet Lou is doing the golf clap. So not the state of Florida, but it was the U.S. It's my home state, Jeff, right now, currently my home state of Pennsylvania, a town called Ambridge, Pennsylvania, which I've never, ever heard of. Mm-hmm. So, Jeff, you are still 2-for-2. Can you do a sweep on this next story? Because here it comes. A man.
Excuse me. Here, what?
I'm sorry. What?
Here it comes. There's a little play on words there.
I'm allergic. I'm allergic. Woo,
thank you. Thank you. I've got inflammation. I've got burning. I got swelling. Swelling is usually good in that situation, but apparently the burning is not. Go ahead.
Exactly. A man wearing goggles and a garbage bag suit was caught on camera breaking into a waste management center and setting several garbage trucks on fire. Surveillance video released this past Friday shows the man breaking into the facility shortly after 2 a.m. on a Sunday. The man, who investigators say is wearing goggles and what appears to be a black garbage bag, is then seen walking to the rear of the property, passing rows of garbage trucks. Deputies say he has a gas canister in his hand. When he gets to the rear of the property, he sets a garbage truck on fire. As he starts walking back towards the front gate, the garbage truck he just left begins to smoke. Once he is off screen, more smoke is seen coming from other trucks. Different surveillance cameras record bursts of flames. A camera inside the building also captures the man opening the door and placing a clear bottle of liquid on the floor. He then sets the building on fire. Deputies have not said how many garbage trucks were set on fire, but they estimated the damage, Jeff, at $4 million. Detective said the man left the facility and left in a black sedan vehicle. They're now asking for any help in trying to find this arsonist. Jeff, is this a Florida story or not?
So what this is a man who's very unhappy with his waste disposal.
Yes.
Because, you know.
Very. I'm going to go disgruntled former employee too.
Well, you know, there may be allegations that in different parts of the country that the waste disposal business possibly owned in some cities, not all, don't want to discriminate, don't want to appear to be disparaging, may have connections with certain families, you know, that are not particularly fond of law enforcement. These are family units that have a definite hierarchy. So this may have been something that was maybe a retribution for something. Let's just say that.
Yeah,
that's all I'm going to say, because my cousin Terrence, who's in the group, he works in the waste disposal, you know, a field. And so I don't want him feeling I'm disparaging him. Not at all. I'm going to say Florida.
Now, OK, so I'm going to give you this, Jeff. You're 100% correct. It is Florida. However, can you for bonus points, give me the county of where this took place?
Completely off the top of my head, I'm going Dade County.
You're close, my man. Your former county, Broward County.
What?
Yes.
That is so unlike people in Broward County. They are very rarely disgruntled. So about anything. So. Yeah. Wow. No, I had not heard that. I still keep up a subscription to the local paper. Had not seen. Is that a recent story again?
That is a recent story. Again, I think that's the past week and a half or so. Yeah.
And Mr. Infection, the painful burning and itching. Is that a recent story?
I think that's so one of my three stories. I don't know which one at this point, but one was from 2017. The other two were I want to say the burning story was the one from 2017.
So now I'm gonna have to find a story of my own with a painful groinal itch and swelling, you know. But
psoriasis, tetter, ringworm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think we need to switch next week, and you take the F. Mary and Kill, and I take the Florida Man or Not stories. And Barry, speaking of that, yes, you're right, my man. It is time to play F. Mary or Kill. Are you ready?
I am ready, and I am intently staring at the photos that you sent my way.
Yes, and I have sent you the photos, and we are playing F, Marry, or Kill, the Saturday Night Live edition, as I've given you three. Now, I got to be honest with you, Barry. I do not feel like there's a bad one in the bunch here again. I'm being very fair. Again, no Mae Youngs, no Fabulous Moolahs. But what's interesting is you remember, of course, since we very, very often talk Seinfeld, the Seinfeld episode where he had the girl that was extremely beautiful, but then when the light hit her a certain way,
oh yeah,
yeah, yes. She was like horrible. Now a couple of these women, they can be beautiful, or if the light hits them a certain way, you can say, I'm not so sure about that. So in the Saturday Night Live edition, Barry, I am going Tina Fey, her friend Amy Poehler, or Kristen Wiig. Barry, what you got?
Oh, three good choices. And you're right, too. So I wouldn't say out of the three that any are complete bombshells or anything like that. I would say that they're all attractive. I would say that they all have great personalities. They're certainly, you know, if they're on Saturday Night Live, and they've all three had great careers in either television or movies. So it is going to be this is a tough one right here. F. Amy Poehler. Marry Kristen Wiig and kill Tina Fey. And that hurts me to say that, because I like Tina Fey.
Yeah.
It's a tough one right there. That's where I'm going to go, though. I'm going to stick with that. I'm sticking with that, Alex.
Okay. So the picture that I sent you, and we'll post these in the group here, the picture of Kristen Wiig is probably the best picture I've ever seen of her.
Absolutely. She looks fantastic.
She looks smoking hot in this picture. Now, I thought she looked really, and I'm drawing a complete blank, maybe Luke and I was, the movie that she did with Ben Stiller.
Kristen Wiig?
Yes. She had the movie where he was the guy that worked for Life magazine. God. And it was a remake. Was
the remake of
Danny Kaye movie.
The Danny Kaye movie. Walter Mitty.
Yes, yes. The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Never saw it. Wow.
It's actually a really good movie. You know why? Because Ben Stiller doesn't play the same guy that he plays in all the other movies. And I really, you know, I like Ben Stiller early in his career. And then it was like, he's kind of playing the same character in every movie. This one he's a little bit different in. And I really like the chemistry between the two of them. But then Kristen Wiig, oh my God. And that's, have you ever seen the skit that she did on Saturday Night Live? I think Will Ferrell was the guest host and they were doing a spoof on Lawrence Welk. And he was like this, you know, big kind of studly, manly singer. And they've got the women that he's singing to. And Kristen Wiig plays this woman who has like a crippled hand or something. Did you ever see this skit?
Doesn't ring a bell at all.
Oh my God. It's so funny because he's like dancing with all these other women. And then she comes up and she's got like this little, this disability, let's just say. And he is completely repelled by her disability. But the way they do it, I know it sounds completely politically incorrect. I apologize for
anything. No, it's, yeah.
But
it's just a podcast. We're
it's,
fine.
Yeah, that's all. But it is really funny. Now let's get to the next ones. Amy Poehler. I loved her in Blades of Glory. She was very funny in that. Tina Fey, very funny. Great, does great writing. I want to say she did that movie. I think it was 13 going on 30 or it was the one. God dang it. Why didn't I write this shit down? With the Mean Girls. That's what she wrote. And she played a teacher in the movie, too.
Right.
So, yeah, she's on. And besides, you know, the one where she works at NBC and all that. 30 Rock. So I am going to say, I think I'm marrying Kristen Wiig and hoping that she continues to look like this.
So we're in agreement then. We're in agreement on that one. All right.
I am going to, I think I'm going the same way. I'm going to F Amy Poehler just because I get the feeling she's probably a little crazier.
Yeah.
And Tina Fey, I'm going to reluctantly, much like you, kill. Because I think she's very amusing and, you know, and she's. Yeah, this could, like you said, tomorrow I could have a completely different opinion on this. And that's, to me, that's a good F, marry, and kill when you feel that way. It's not like, oh, yeah, oh, no, there's this one. I'm not, you know. All right. So now, Barry, why don't we go to our match of the week? Before we go to our match of the week, we recently lost Tracy Smothers, the wild-eyed Southern boy. Just some quick memories of Tracy Smothers, whether it's as a single or with his tag team with Steve Armstrong.
Yeah, So I think one of the things, and somebody else said this, I definitely agree with the observation on it, but somebody else said it on Facebook, but the amount of love shown to Tracy Smothers, where everybody just reaching out and saying these amazing, great things about him was really unique. And we've lost a lot of people this year in the wrestling business too. We've lost a lot of people and many were older, but I'm not quite sure the outpouring of love what Tracy received that we had seen previously. Cause you know, it really was absolutely incredible. And anybody that it was in the wrestling business had something positive and kind to say about him. And I thought that was really remarkable. I learned a couple of things. He was trained by Steve Kern, which I was not aware. Steve and Stan Lane, I guess when they were the Fabs, actually trained and broke Tracy in, but we saw him in Florida, I guess within a couple of years of him starting his career, and he came in and was part of the Southern Boys. And they were a really good tag team. They were young, so it was really hard to get a gauge. And, you know, even at that stage, if you have a gimmick like the Southern Boys, you kind of know, you know, you're going to be regional. This is not something that's going to play up in New York, you know, by any stretch. But I think that they were, as a team, they were really underrated. And both guys were. Steve Armstrong also, tremendously underrated. But Tracy, when Tracy got going, because we're going to review this match, when he got going, he was really, really good. And I don't know if I ever gave him, while he was alive, the props for his talent. Because when you watch this match, you know, he really was good. So I don't. You know, I know that they were up in New York briefly, I believe. The Young Pistols, was that right?
Or yes.
Young Pistols. And I think they were in WCW twice, if I'm correct. I know once was really brief. And then they had that run that came in the early 90s. And then we saw Tracy in Smoky Mountain, and Tracy was somebody, I think, Jim Cornette, and I haven't listened to Jim Cornette, but Jim Cornette would have known Tracy as well as anybody. And, you know, he obviously thought a lot of Tracy, put him on top in Smoky Mountain. He was the top babyface for a while. He was solid. Tracy was a really solid worker, and Tracy's the kind of guy, and this is so cliche, and I hate when people say it, so of course I'm going to go ahead and say it, Jeff. But had Tracy come along 10 years earlier, he would have been the kind of guy going territory to territory doing well. And he was just kind of caught at that, you know, when he started his career, it's the end of the territories. It's on the earlier side of the of national expansion. And it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for him to get a full-time gig like that. You know, he could certainly do jobs or work mid-card. But I think if the territories had been around and Tracy had, say, started in 75, he could have gone to a lot of different territories, probably gotten a decent push and probably done extremely well. So young guy, 58 years old, hate hearing this. I know that he was still making appearances, I think, 3 weeks before he died, 2 weeks before he died. So he was still out there, just, you know, 58 years old and a guy that I think gave a lot to professional wrestling. So rest in peace, Tracy. We will miss you.
Yeah, you know, I think as I was recording an episode of John McAdam's podcast recently, I mentioned Tracy, and I think the first time I saw Tracy was on an episode of the UWF, and you know, he was in there, and he was like a young guy that they were, you know, like pushing sort of as an up and coming guy, the guy that would lose the match, but he would put up a hell of a fight, and you know. And it would be like, you know, like he's learning, he's getting better every week and stuff like that. And then he moved on to the team with Steve Armstrong, the Southern Boys, as I mentioned on John's show, a gimmick certainly that would not be a national gimmick today, that's for sure. But that doesn't mean that they weren't a really good tag team, because they really were. And then they, it's interesting, I was watching a video today where when they became the Young Pistols, apparently they were introduced as being from Cheyenne, Wyoming. and so Tracy was, it was like when he was coming back to Smoky Mountain, and Tracy was saying, yeah, those people that wear the suits in the corporations, they told us we were going to be from Wyoming. I said, well, I've never even been to Wyoming. And so, the storyline was they had made a lot of money and they bought property in Wyoming. That's why they were being billed from Wyoming, which I thought was really kind of funny. And so, but he was a pretty good deal in Smoky Mountain. It was a promotion. It was just basically tailor-made for somebody like Tracy. I really liked Tracy there. I liked his feud with Brian Lee. I liked his tag team with Tony Anthony. You know, I said, I really liked the line that he would use about Brian Lee when he was feuding with him about prime time prima donna Brian Lee. And then, of course, he eventually made his way up to Philadelphia and started appearing on ECW cards, as one of the full-blooded Italians, where he would do the thing where he would like stroke his chin with his hand, sort of like a Marlon Brando thing. That was very funny. And so he obviously had a good sense of humor, but you also read that he was a guy that for a young wrestler in the business, he was always there to offer some advice, give them some direction in their career, didn't mind critiquing their matches, wasn't the proverbial veteran that, you know, that didn't have time for anybody. He seemingly always made time to help another wrestler out. And so that's pretty cool to hear that. And so we raised an adult beverage to the memory of the late Tracy Smothers. So now, Barry, let's get to their match that he and Steve Armstrong as the Southern Boys had with Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express, July 7th, 1990 in Baltimore at the Great American Bash. You've watched the match. Tell us what you think about it.
Yeah, it's a great match too. And there's really no flaw to this match whatsoever. This is such a fun period. One thing that struck me as I was watching, and I got really excited watching this match, and I think a lot of it was, A, the crowd reaction. Those Baltimore crowds for the NWA WCW shows in the late 80s and early 90s, they were on fire. You know, they were going to Jimmy Seafood, and these crowds
Sabatino's,
they just made everything bigger. They made everything bigger and everything better. So the crowd's really into it. This match has got a hot start right from the get-go. There's lots going on. As we said, Steve was really good as well. And Steve Armstrong's another one of these guys that, for whatever all intents and purposes, kind of just got out of the wrestling business. You know, where Tracy went on and was still working independence and Smoky Mountain and stuff, Steve just kind of just disappeared. And he was really good. I think he's the overlooked Armstrong, because nobody ever talks about him.
Yeah.
Everybody talks about, you know, how great Brad was. And we just celebrated. We just, you know, I think it was the 9th anniversary of Brad's death that just occurred recently. And Bob Armstrong, obviously, within the last month or two, passed away. Scott was on the smaller side, became a ref. But nobody ever talks about Steve. And Steve was that good, I think. what makes this match great, too, is that the Midnight Express are equally as loved in Baltimore, if not more, than the Southern Boys. And they completely play to the crowd. First at Stan Lane, totally. There's like a whole section. It's almost like the front row section D from Greensboro, you know? There's this whole section of fans that Stan can just look at and make some gesture, and they just erupt for him. And then at the end of the match, towards the end of the match, Bobby's doing it to the same group. But to me, that was so cool because none of that was being forced upon fans. That was just fans acting naturally. This is what they wanted. This was their reaction. I loved. The heels were definitely over. There is a really fun karate exchange between Tracy and Stan Lane.
Yes, like one of the better parts of the match for sure.
It is. It was, and it's hokey in its own, but it's so much fun. And they bring up Stan as a black belt. I apparently used to be a sensei, a karate instructor. Tracy, I believe, was.
He was like Kreese.
he was Kreese. It was crazy. Cobra Kai. That's the alleged. I don't know if he was a black belt, but they say he was. They say Tracy Smothers. I believe they claim that he was an expert in martial arts. But they do this thing for maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and it's great. And, of course, Stan gets the upper hand early, and then Tracy gets the comeback, the babyface comeback off of it, handled extremely well. The fans completely buying it too, which I thought was great. They're really invested. They're always into it. You know, one thing we see now with matches, Jeff, which I think it's overkill to some degree, because matches are choreographed, unlike in the old days where they really weren't. You know, you would talk about spots and then do your finishes, but for the most part, a lot of this was just guys working it out in the ring. But the false finishes here really, really work in this match because, you know, you've got about 2 minutes of false finishes before you finally get to it. And, you know, now it's almost overkill in a lot of matches. This completely works. But this was so much fun. Watching this match really makes me go back to the days of the good stuff from WCW and the NWA, which really I think was over within a year or two of this match. You know, I think once Hogan came, the direction, Hogan, Bischoff, et cetera, I don't know who you want to put the blame on, but the direction of WCW completely changed. And it wasn't quite as much fun as it was in watching this match. So I really enjoyed it. And I'm really glad that we had the opportunity to review this match this week.
You know, I'll tell you what I thought about this match when it was over. This is one of those matches that is a prime example of a really, really good match, bordering on great match between two really, really good teams. And when the match is over, there's been a pinfall and neither team has lost anything.
Absolutely.
You know, the Southern Boys, if anything, were elevated by this match, you know, and the Midnight Express, even though they used the heel tactics to win the match, they didn't lose anything. It wasn't like, that's a cheap victory, you know, because the match was the karate exchange you talked about was just fantastic. The way it was like Bobby tagged into Stan and Stan comes in and he's all cocky and, you know, doing that Stan Lane kind of walk. And then he gets up and he gets in the stance and he's kind of getting his fingers in his tights and hitching his tights up a little bit as he's getting ready to do a kick. And it's so perfect the way he does it. And Tracy's just kind of standing there and then Stan hits him with a couple moves and, you know, Stan's getting even more arrogant and more cocky. And And when Tracy finally blocks it and then does some moves on his own, it's just it's tremendous. But the match is more than just that one spot. Mind you, that's probably my favorite spot in the whole match. But the match is more than that. It's a lot of Tracy selling as the Midnight Express is dominating, I think, the majority of the action. But it's done so well. And good Lord, I really think I could do a Midnight Express match every single week, Barry, because I just love first of all, the interplay with Cornette and the crowd and the camera guy is just awesome. But Bobby and Stan just working like a finely tuned machine. And especially when they have an opponent, you know, and it's funny because, you know, people talk and I'm one of them. I've talked about how much I love the Midnight Express versus the Rock and Roll and what a great feud that was. Midnight versus Fantastics. Great feud, great matches. And the Southern Boys are really, I think that's the third in the trilogy of teams that they had really solid matches with Stan and Bobby. And, but the Southern Boys are the team that everyone kind of forgets about, I think. And, that's a shame because the Southern Boys were a really good team. I know nowadays, you know, people would say, oh, it's a horrible gimmick. How could they do that? And how they take that nationally? And look past what their gimmick was. Look at how great and solid they were in the ring as a team.
Yeah, so the WWF at that stage as well, they definitely wouldn't have been a fit. Even if they were doing the Southern gimmick, there was no emphasis on work rate, you know, as we like to call it. It was really about what gets over with the crowd, but it wasn't the quality of matches. And that's not to say, look, you still had your Bret Harts, you had your Shawn Michaels, you had guys who could give you a good match. But, you know, the good matches were really few and far between at that stage. There was so much filler and so much nonsense that was designed to get over with the younger crowd. So I would imagine WCW would have been a better fit, but I think you could have done a lot with them. I think you could have turned them heel. I don't think there was any reason that they had to be baby faces. You could have done more. And it does make me wonder, you know, Cornette's booking Smoky Mountain. Tracy Smothers was the top baby face there for a long time. Had a hell of a feud with the Dirty White Boy as well. You know, you could have brought Steve Armstrong in, maybe as a heel, to attack Tracy or align with Tracy. It does make me wonder, you know, what Steve did, what he's doing now that he got out of the wrestling business. But they were a good team, and I don't think they're ever going to be remembered on the same level as, say, the Midnight Express or Rock and Roll Express. But we should really quantify that. It's not based off of the talent aspect, because I think in many ways they were equally as talented. I think it's probably longevity and more exposure, I would imagine.
Yeah. And, you know, you just reminded me, I forgot about the program he had with Tony Anthony, the Dirty White Boy. That was great stuff too.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah.
It's like where they had the whole thing with, you know, with Ron Wright in the wheelchair.
Yep.
I got to deal with my arthritis and my heart is going. My doctor tells me I need to, oh my God, that stuff was, you know, and Tony Anthony was a really good promo guy. You know, and the fact that Tony Anthony during the program would come out with the Yankees jersey on for, you know, all the small towns yes. in Tennessee, that was just something very small. And so I don't know if it was Cornette who came up with that or if it was Tony or Ron Wright, but it was whoever came up with that was just brilliant, because that's just such a subtle, small thing that would fly over some people's heads. But wearing the Yankees jersey and the Yankees cap was just great stuff, especially for somebody like Tony Anthony, who was from around there. So, but what was his gimmick town?
Do you remember? Bucksnort, Tennessee.
Bucksnort, Tennessee. That's right. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Stuff. So Jeff, here we go. Here's a controversial one. Tony Anthony did the angle in Gulf Coast Southeastern with his wife. Do you remember this? Of course.
Oh yeah, we talked about it.
Did we talk? Did we go in?
Yes.
That was one of the earlier episodes, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's what did we say about that? What were our thoughts about
it? I recall
that?
You completely hated it.
Yes,
I know. And that was when you were still finding your way here on the podcast. You weren't the experienced broadcaster you are now, I'm sure.
Right.
But no, you know, I remember that was a very polarizing angle, because it was either people thought it was really well done and very effective at getting him over as a heel, or if it was too over the top and the whole domestic abuse thing was just, you know, like really distasteful. But yeah, that was definitely created. Dr. Tom Pritchard, you know, can I talk to Tom, please? Can I talk to Tom?
I talk to Tommy. Yeah.
So that was, that was definitely good stuff.
Yeah. She was really good in her role too. She was, somebody I thought, I don't believe they're together any longer either, but I always thought, had they not been together as a couple in professional wrestling, that she may have gone farther, because I always thought that she offered something pretty special. She could be, as you just were doing, can I talk to Tom? And then she could flip on a dime and she could be like the raving lunatic, the raving Southern lunatic. So I liked her.
Are there raving Southern lunatics?
That's what I hear. I don't know this for a fact, Jeff, but that's what I'm hearing. So yes, they're out there apparently.
So Barry, unfortunately, we also suffered another loss, a real major one as far as I'm concerned, because you know me as a fan of film, movie buff, whatever you want to say. One of my favorites of all time is Sean Connery. For me, the number one James Bond, the guy that's always been the best Bond in my eyes. We lost him 90 years old. I mean, you know, he certainly got his money's worth out of life. Unfortunately, I've read his wife, I think he lived in, I want to say either the Bahamas or Bermuda is where he passed away, one of those two. And his wife indicated that towards the end that Sean was dealing with some Alzheimer's a guy that was definitely a man for his time, because the Sean Connery that came along in the early to mid 60s, I don't know if he would have flown too high in these times. But real quick, some memories of the great Sean Connery.
Yeah, so I don't think it's just your opinion about James Bond. I think he is universally recognized as the best Bond, but he is James Bond. I mean, at the end of the day, Sean Connery, I think, will always be James. No matter who comes along from this point forward, he will always be James Bond. So for me, you know, what's interesting, I want to say it was probably during the pandemic over the last few months, I actually Googled Sean Connery to see what he was up to. And I saw he was in his late 80s. He had officially retired and was not making any more films. But it didn't mention that Alzheimer's or dementia, whichever he had had. It didn't mention that he had that. And then right after that, I Googled Gene Hackman, who is similar age and also is retired from making any movies at this point. But losing Sean Connery, look, I know he's 90 years old and it's not like he was struck down in the prime of his life, but he's an icon. He was an absolute icon. And for me, Highlander, Jeff, which, you know, you and I were joking about before we started recording, Highlander to me, it's one of my favorite movies of all time. It's in my top 20. And he's such a pivotal role. He's got such a great character in that movie that, you know, with the day he died, I watched Highlander that night just to, you know, to show my respect and pay memoriam for Sean Connery. And Outland, I saw Outland on cable 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago. And you, myself, and Lou briefly, again, before we started recording, were talking about it. And I really liked the movie a lot. I think it's a great premise, great cast, Peter Boyle, Francis Sternhagen. The only thing I didn't like about Outland was probably what I thought was kind of a flat ending, but I love the idea. And Sean Connery, what made him unique, I don't think he could be bad in any role. I just think he's one of those guys, if he shows up and you're able to film him and he's on camera, he's so watchable. He's going to be good. There's nothing, you know, he couldn't be bad. The only thing, and we also discussed this, was the outfit that he wore in Zardoz.
the early Borat.
Yeah, it's the most bizarre outfit you've ever seen. And he didn't have the body type either for this type of outfit. Yeah. Like, at least if this had gone on somebody maybe muscular or tanned, then you might have said, okay, you know, whatever. But you've got an older guy, an older, hairy, really white guy. wearing this, what is like a wraparound diaper and like boots. It's,
well, let me just clarify for those who have never heard of the movie Zardoz or never saw it. It was a movie, I believe, set in the future, you know, sort of science fiction-y. So I think the costume that he was wearing was supposedly of the time in the future is what, you know, his character. That's why his character was wearing that particular costume. So go ahead.
What's the costume? Costume designer needed to be shot for this one because, right, exactly. What the fuck were you thinking? I mean, there's a million things you could do. This is what you do to this poor guy. So, so that didn't make any sense. But again, he was good in everything that he did. I don't think you're going to, you know, I go back through some of the earlier James Bond movies, you know, and whether it's Thunderball or Goldfinger, you know, I'm not sure which is my favorite. He was one of those guys, you know, there's that it factor that they always talk about, you know, whether it's in wrestling, they talk about it, but in movies and TV, obviously they talk about it. And he had this it factor that you could literally put him on screen and he's going to capture your attention. He definitely had it. So rest in peace, Sean Connery. I don't think we're going to see another Sean Connery ever again.
No. Oh, wow. You know, my wife was, we were sitting in the living room and she said, somebody just posted that Sean Connery died. And, you know, again, a guy that was, I believe, 90 years old. He certainly got his money's worth out of life. This wasn't a guy. I think I saw someone post, this wasn't James Dean, who was killed when he was 25 in a tragic car accident. I mean, this is a guy that was, when I said he was of his time, there is a great, scene that in absolutely no way could ever fly in a movie today, even a Bond film, in the very early part of the movie Goldfinger. He is sitting out by the pool of a hotel in South Florida. I'm not sure if it was the Diplomat or something else, Barry.
Might have been the Fountain Blue, right?
Fountain Blue, yeah, you're right. It could be the Fountain Blue. And he was sitting out there, and he's talking to a beautiful young lady. And Felix Leiter comes up to talk to him, and he says, oh, Felix, this is, and I can't remember what the girl's name was. And he says, hi. Felix says hello to the girl. And then Bond literally gives her a slap on the ass and says, okay, go ahead and leave now. It's time for man talk. They're just like so dismissive of the woman, you know? And, but it's like, that's exactly what James Bond was like back then, you know? And you think about it, the way that just the character of James Bond has evolved over the years to what it is now with Daniel Craig and how, you know, the character and the films have evolved from being so, you know, they said that a lot of times, the Bond as portrayed by Sean Connery may or may not have been involved with a non-consensual sexual act, you know, where he sort of forced himself on women. The famous scene in Goldfinger with the incredibly named Pussy Galore in the barn, where he kind of pushes her down and forces himself. And until, of course, she eventually acquiesces because he's James Bond and he's so, you know, wonderfully handsome and she can't resist him and stuff like that, even though the character is written in the book by Ian Fleming was a lesbian. But I digress. So I started thinking, we have talked before about what our favorite Bond films were. And I want to say mine was either Goldfinger or From Russia with Love. Those are kind of the two top Bond films. And it was a role, I think, that eventually ended up overwhelming Sean Connery, because I just don't think he, when he first took on the role, could have imagined just how internationally famous he was going to become. Because he was, you know, good Lord, when he went to Japan to film You Only Live Twice, he shows up in Japan and he's completely overwhelmed by the media and the fans that are there, that they had trouble filming the movie because it was such a public calamity that James Bond was in Japan filming this movie. But I wanted to talk about what your favorite, obviously, you know, you mentioned Highlander and you mentioned Outland. So let me throw out a couple of other movies that I would list as my favorite Bond or non-Bond films of Sean Connery's. I'm going to say, of course, The Untouchables is what he won the Academy Award for in 1988 as the beat cop who joins the Untouchables. What's the line? He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. That's the Chicago way.
Yep.
Then, of course, his role in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where he plays Indiana Jones's father. He was great in that. Hunt for Red October, where he plays the only Russian with a Scottish accent, as people point out, you know, one ping. And, he was great in The Rock with Nicolas Cage. But here's one, Barry. I don't know if you've seen this one. That's a really good Sean Connery movie. Did you ever see it was a movie based on a book by a writer. I believe his name was Umberto Eco, The Name of the Rose. Did you ever see that?
No. What was that?
He plays a priest or a friar. It's like set in 14th century Italy Spain. And there's a murder at their at the church or the convent where these nuns are. And he's the one that the church sends to investigate how this murder occurred on church grounds. That is, you know, been a apparently just a huge event in this town. And like, you know, people are asking for answers as to what happened. And so he's sent by the church to gather information. And I remember that there's a young, why am I drawing a blank? The kid that was...
Christian Slater.
Thank you, Christian Slater. Appreciate that, Lou. Christian Slater, who was only like maybe 15 or 16 when the movie was made, I think. Very young, but he plays his young like ward that goes with him. And that's a movie to seek out. That's very, very interesting murder mystery. It's called The Name of the Rose, and good stuff. So, Barry, this is an abbreviated version of Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. But before we leave, I know Mr. Rose even more than a story about itching and burning from seminal fluid. That one's going to stick with us for a long time.
This is going to be the
itching and burning episode, Barry.
Sure.
Barry Rose loves a good food-related story.
Absolutely.
Yes. And so the other day, the day that we had the tropical storm that came through, and by the way, Barry, can I just say, we left Florida to get away from that kind of stuff. We come up here to the north part of Georgia, where we're at the foothills of the mountains. They're not supposed to be hurricanes and tropical storms, but by God, we got them. And so I
lost power, Jeff. You lost power twice, right?
I lost power twice. Yes. And so I had to get up and take my wife to work. It was very inconvenient for me having to get up early, but take my wife to work because the winds, of course, were still whipping around and we had rain and about, 50 or 60 mile an hour winds. So my wife says, look, you know, I'm a little shaky driving in this kind of conditions. Would you mind taking me? Oh, no. And I said, if that's what you want, I'm happy to do it.
How far is the drive?
It's on a good day with traffic, it's a good 45 minute drive. It's a pretty good.
Oh, so you're, it's a big drive here. All right.
Yeah. And so, so anyway, so I said, yes, I'm of course a good husband and, all that kind of stuff. And so I took her to work. And so when we were coming home, I went and drove all the way back and picked her up and we're coming back home. And she says, you want to stop and get a bite to eat, you know, before we get home? I said, okay, what would you like? Well, there's this place that's on the ride home from her. It's called City Barbecue. So we go in. Now, mind you, this was a Thursday night. So we go in and it's Thursday about 6:30, give or take a few minutes. We go in and as you walk in the entryway into the restaurant, and this is something that you'll appreciate, Barry, very similar to the entranceway of Mission Barbecue. Okay? And so you go in and they take your order and then they'll bring the food to your table. Okay? So we looked up. And just as we're like next in line, my wife looks at the menu and she says, huh? I said, what? She goes, it says up there, they're sold out of barbecue pork. I said, get the fuck out of here. I said it a little too loud because there was a family with kids in front of me. I felt really bad. And I said, oops, sorry. I said, they're sold out of pork at 6:30 in the evening. What the heck is that about? And so we went up and sure enough, they said, yeah, we're sold out of pork tonight. And I said, okay, we're gone. And so we left. And so the next day, my wife came home early because she works on Friday. She only works till 1 p.m. And so she said, do you want to go out and get something to eat? And we had something else to do. And so she said, how about after we do that, why don't we go and we'll go get something to eat at that City Barbecue? And at this point, I'm like, they've already disappointed me once. And matter of fact, that evening before, I texted you and said, can you believe a barbecue restaurant that sells out of pork at 6:30 on a Thursday? What the hell? And you very humorously said, I think they should shut their doors now and really self-examine themselves because that's completely unbelievable that they would do that. Yeah. And so so my wife basically talked me into going back to the place the second night in a row. And so we went in there and very happy to find out they, in fact, had barbecue pork that night. And so we ordered our pork, I think with fries, baked beans. My wife got maybe some onion rings or something. We try to get different sides and hush puppies. And so we sat down and we were talking and they bring our food over. And of course, now because of COVID, they have to bring you the little packets of salt and pepper and they bring you little cups of the sauce. They can't give you the squeeze bottles anymore. And so we're sitting there and we start eating our food. I looked at my wife and I said, you know what? I got to tell you something. She goes, what? I go, this might be first or second place of the barbecue that we've had since we've been up here. This is really, really good. I said, I'm really glad you talked me into coming back. And then I tried the barbecue beans. Excellent. French fries, a little bit of a heat lamp effect there. But my wife was trying like the cornbread and she tried the hush puppies and she said they were all very good. And everything that she got as a side was very good. And she got the brisket. And she said the brisket was very good also. So then we're getting ready to leave. And I told my wife, I said, give me one second. I want to talk to somebody. I went back and I asked to speak to the manager. And he came out and I said, I'm just curious. I wanted to ask you a question. I mentioned that we are an award-winning podcast. And I, explained to him that we talk about food quite a bit. And I said, my question to you is, how do you run out of pork on a Thursday night at 6:30? And he explained to me that what had happened was he usually cooks 300 pounds of pork a day, which just absolutely amazing.
That's a lot of pork. Yeah.
And he sold out in part because they had a fundraiser at the restaurant that day. So there were people coming in as part of the fundraiser, which may have accounted for it. But here, when we went, it was maybe 215, 230. And he told me they had already used over 100 pounds of pork at 215, 230 in the afternoon, which is, They're doing an incredible volume. He said, yeah. And I asked him, I said, have you guys been affected negatively by COVID at all? And he says, no, the incredible thing is, you know, with our takeout business and stuff like that, because they literally have about 8 parking spots out in the lot that are strictly for people that are coming to pick up, you know, takeout orders. He said, it's amazing that our business for takeout has been sustaining us. And not only that, but we're in a stronger position than we were this time last year, which is, you know, I'm very happy to see a private business, a private individually owned restaurant is in that position because, you know, geez, I don't need to tell you, Barry, about how many places have either gone under or in danger of going under. I also want to mention that, you know, of course, they had all that. They have the sweet barbecue sauce, their original barbecue sauce. But Barry, the one I tried, and I got to tell you, I love this name, was their brush fire barbecue sauce.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, just a little bit of bite to it. And, you know, I told my wife, I said, yeah, you would not like this. My wife does not like the stuff that's got a particular extra spiciness to it, but I really liked it. So Barry, the City Barbecue in Johns Creek, Georgia, for those Georgia listeners out there, thumbs up, and it's worth going out of your way for.
Yeah, the only thing I would say too is, and it's an important thing, and maybe it's a smaller business, but if he's making 300 pounds of pork per day and he's selling out,
He needs to make more.
Yeah, that's a simple math on that one. Maybe up it to 400. The truth is, pulled pork the next day is going to be absolutely fine. So it's not like he's got to throw this out or do anything, but make enough, because I can tell you, and one of the things that you kind of learn early on when you're managing restaurants is that if people go to your restaurant for a specific product and you don't have it, it only has to happen twice. And after the second time, they're basically going to say, I'm not going to go back.
Yeah,
they never have what I want. Accurate. Right. It could happen once. We all get that. But if it happens twice, you're fucked. So yeah, that's all I would say. And I'm happy to hear, A, that there's a small business out there, or a small restaurant that is being successful. And I'm also happy to hear that the quality of food is good. So I think that's a great thing. And I love the fact that you're supporting them and trying to do right by them. So just make a little extra.
Yeah. So anyway, okay, as we begin to wrap up, a couple of things here. Once again, we raise a toast to Sean Connery. Sean Connery, I believe, Barry, isn't he from Wales?
So how cool is that?
That was for John Barnes, by the way. I said we're going to tell a joke about Wales because yes. John is the guy that gets outraged whenever we claim someone is Welsh who's not really Welsh. So, John, that joke is for you. I'm not sure that joke is extremely prudent.
Ooh, very nice.
That was for Brian Huff, the use of the word prudent. Okay, we got that out of it. So
you don't get it. You know, it's funny, too. It's because I understand it. I get there's England, Scotland, Ireland, and there's Wales, and there's other, you know, I may not be aware of. But at the same time, maybe at this point, maybe it's just a blanket statement of saying the United Kingdom. But I like the fact. I like the fact that we have people in our Facebook group that listen to the show, which I think is great because they'll comment on something and obviously point out the Welsh thing that we've been fucking around with for the last few weeks. But we've got people all throughout the UK. We've got people in Japan. We've got people in Germany, people in Australia. Absolutely. I know that we've got a couple of listeners in New Zealand, Canada.
You know who we have not heard from lately, Barry?
Who would that be?
Who, when we first started this podcast was, and I believe she's still in our group.
Yes.
If she still listens, your favorite fingernail artist, Ashley Elena Kamek. Ashley, we haven't heard from you lately in the Facebook group. Where are you?
So we heard from her last week. Oh, and okay. Well, this is it. Somebody, I don't know, you know, you're catching me off guard, but somebody posted your favorite burger place, like name your 3 favorite burger places. And Ashley chimed in and said, I like Five Guys. So immediately I responded, what are their names? And then it just, the door was open, Jeff. Low hanging fruit. Had to go there. And then she responded and basically said, well, this is actually true. There are 5 guys that I guess are chasing her. So I think she's got a busy social life, which has kept her out of our Facebook.
I can't believe she would allow her social life to overtake her love for breaking kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. I'm hurt, Barry.
Yes.
That's all I can say. So as we get ready to leave you folks, I will say one thing, Barry. Barry, negotiations are currently ongoing. The pen has not yet met the paper, but the paper has been typed up for the agreement to be made next week. A very special guest. Can I just leave it at that, Barry? A very special guest here on Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry.
I would definitely. Because we haven't recorded with this person yet. So There's always the chance that we could get stiffed and they could stiff us.
That's only happened one time, very famously by a certain son of a legendary Florida promoter.
I think we can tell that story now, Jeff. I don't know if we ever went fully in depth with that story, did we?
I think we did our anniversary show.
I think, okay, you're right. We did. It was Pat Tanaka. Yeah. Pat Tanaka, who we famously called, and he said, can you call me back in 5 minutes? And then we call, and he doesn't pick up the phone at that point. Complete shine job on that one. But we do. We have a guy. Let's, without giving this away.
I will say, he is a guy that before I got the Royal Bootski from the dinners in Fort Lauderdale at the Brazilian restaurant, he was a guy that was at the guest at the last dinner that I attended. So
did he make the book?
No, matter of fact, he did not, but I believe in your group, I might have published an interview because I did the transcript of the interview. I have posted pictures of this individual. Yeah. I think I put a short video clip that he had done for not for this podcast, but for another podcast where he cut a promo for that podcast. So, yeah, I think we've given enough hints now. So we really hope we get this guy because I think this will be a really fun guest, Barry.
Maybe not necessarily fun. Well, it will be fun because I think he is a little unpredictable and I think he has a bit of a temper. So it should be interesting based off of how we handle it as well.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, this will not be a boring interview.
There you go. This will not be boring. Yes.
Pretty much guarantee that. Okay. On behalf of my co-host Barry Rose and our producer, the sweet man, the chef Lou Kippelman, I would like to say that Breaking Kayfabe with Bowden and Barry, a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. And until next week, when we hope to have that special guest to entertain the masses, I am Jeff Bowden, and we will talk to you next week. We're out.